I'm Susie Larson. Thanks for listening to this podcast from Susie Larson Live. It's only just a matter of. Welcome, welcome to Susie Larson Live. Always honored to get to spend this time with you. In fact, I look forward to bringing you conversations every single day that hopefully inspire you in your faith walk, that deepen your understanding of God's Word, and that heightens your awareness of His very real presence in your life. Well, if you listen often enough, you know this is one of your favorites. Every month we have our friend Dr. Troy Sproul on the show to talk about health and the healing process. Today we're going to kick off our conversation talking about speaking healing, speaking health, and I can't wait to hear what the doc has to say about that. But as usual, we've got a backlog of questions, but we always give priority to the questions that come in by text. And don't wait till the bottom of the hour. This is what happens almost every time. It's kind of crickets, and so we're fine. We've got plenty of questions in the notes to tackle. But then about the bottom of the hour, they flood in so fast and so hard, we can't even get to all of them, and then they spill over. So if you can maybe not procrastinate, I didn't mean that to sound condescending, and it absolutely did. I didn't mean it to. But if you can not put it off. Is that better, Angie? She's smiling at me now. She's like, yeah, that's much better. If you don't mind just texting now, that would be so great. You can text the word 877-933-2484. Before we get Dr. Troy in, I have to tell you, most of you know I'm kind of working my way back from a few health challenges. And on my good days, if my body gives me an inch, I take a mile, and then I'll take 10, because I just want to take good ground on the good days so I don't lose so much on the bad days. And I was out biking today, and I was enjoying it. I love biking in the humidity. It was hot, and I had music in my ear, and I was so grateful to be able to be out there. But I also kind of inwardly lamenting a little bit, because my pace is still not what it used to be before things fell apart for me 5 years ago, and by several miles an hour. That's just discouraging, because I keep pounding at it. My gains are slow. So I was kind of lamenting. But anyway, I come up behind this guy, this old guy, but he's all decked out in all the biking garb. You could tell he's serious. And he's got even a little helmet rearview mirror thing. And I just go, hey, coming on your left. And he goes, not today. And he sped up. And I'm like, oh yeah, game on. And so I'm racing with this old man, and we're riding, and I sped past him, and you know, I got way ahead, and then I coasted a little bit, and before I knew it hit me, he blew past me, and he goes, I'm 80 years old. That was awesome. I'm like, you're kidding me. So we kept racing each other until we slowed down long enough to ride next to each other, and he said he was diagnosed with throat cancer stage 3 and kidney cancer stage 3, neither of which was he expected to survive from, and both times they wanted him to have both chemo and radiation. I said, well, did you do it? And he said, no. He said, I got on my bike. He said, this bike saved my life. And we chatted for a little bit, and I rode off, and I almost cried. I was like so inspired by this man. And I just realized, and I just think maybe if you need to hear this today, I think sometimes we have a misplaced lament. I think true lament is really important for the grieving process and to heal. I think it is. But sometimes there's a misplaced lament, you know, because we're kind of lamenting about the not yet and missing the right now. And when he inspired me, he kicked my rear end, and I read the rest of my ride fast and hard, and was alive and grateful. And I just think sometimes you need to see someone else's story so that you can embrace your own story and realize you're far more blessed than you even know. And I hope that encourages you today. And Dr. Troy, welcome to the show. I know you love stories like that too, because I we've talked about this plenty of times, that when we're in the health and healing process, God puts people in our path. Absolutely. To get us to look up, you know?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I love that story.
Yeah.
Yet you are so competitive.
I'm terrible. That I would compete with an 80-year-old man and say, game on. There's something wrong with me.
Yeah. You didn't need to do the trash talking at the end, did you?
No. You know, I told my friend, I'm so drawn to snarky, crabby old men, because my dad was one of those. I love him, but he was just so snarky that I've met my match when I meet. So anyway, I was happy the rest of the day, because he was such a fighter and so inspiring. And I love that God would put people in our path to go, you got to see the bigger story. So before we get to what I just can't wait to hear what you're going to say about speaking healing, you know this, we start with a verse, and maybe your verse is connected to what you're going to talk about.
Absolutely, and it's connected to what you just talked about.
Oh, neat.
So Jeremiah 17:14, Heal me, Lord, and I will be healed. Mm. Save me, and I will be saved, for you are the one I praise. And I picked that just because regardless of where you are in your journey with health, there's a healing that's there for you at some point, somewhere. And it doesn't change anything when it comes to just keeping your eye on the Lord the whole time. And healing occurs very differently. And your story is a beautiful example of that. God is working all the time. He can perform a miracle like that just instantly, but many times he doesn't because there's a process in place. And you could have gotten in your own way and not allowed God to be part of your healing by not participating with the person he sent you that day on the bicycle ride.
Oh, wow,
ride.
Cool.
And so I just, I believe when we keep our eye on God, then we will see the opportunities that he's putting in front of you, like having a little bike race with an 80-year-old.
It's really pathetic when you think about it. You know?
It's beautiful. I think it's amazing.
Thank you. That's so awesome. Wow.
So I think that happens all the time. And if we're in the darkness of the valley and got our head down, we're not seeing the light that God's put right in front of us. And all these blessings are potentially going right by us. And those little moments actually help the healing process. So it's not just the, you know, we look at these biblical things, Noah and all kinds of different Moses and just stories, and they're just massively impactful stories. But we can't forget the little moment by moment impact God puts in on ourselves that really helped define who those two guys were or who the other people were. And that's the stuff you just can't necessarily put in scripture or you can, it just, we don't see it. That's why it's the living word. It just ends up being there later when we're actually looking for it. And so there really is just a healing that we have to keep our eye on God so that we don't get ourselves in the way or don't let the world around us get in the way of that healing as well. And insight and all kinds of information and things that end up being of value can come from so many different sources within the healing journey. And so I really feel it's important for people, regardless of where they're at right now, the answer is always the same. What does God say?
Come
Keep
on.
Your eye on God.
Amen.
It doesn't matter where you are in that journey. What does God say?
Mm.
So that's where, for me, when I read that, and I know there's a whole bunch of other stuff to that, the actual part of Jeremiah, but in the world we're living in right now, that's the one constant for the last 2 years. I've just really had people check in and say, well, what's God say? And if their answer is, I don't know, I'd say it's probably a good time to open their Bible, get into scripture, pray, fast, and let me know what he says.
That's so good. So good. As you're talking, Doc, I'm thinking of, there's a passage that says, no wickedness dwells with him. And I was sitting with that one day going, no wickedness dwells. What else doesn't dwell? Sickness doesn't dwell with him. You know, healing dwells with him.
Yeah.
He's the healer. He's the provider. He's our banner and our defender. And so I thought, you know, I dwell with you, Lord, so sickness can't dwell with me. And I just started to think about that. And one of our guests in the past, I just can't remember which one it was, but he said, Alan Wright, the blessing guy. He said, God is so inexplicably bound to his word that when he sends forth his word, he actually sends forth himself. Like his spirit, his ruach breath is himself. So when he sends his word, he sends himself. And there's a verse, I want to say Psalm 107, 20 or 40, something like that. It's in Psalm 107, I think it's 20. But anyway, it says, he sent forth his word and healed them and rescued them from the grave. And you think about, not only did he send forth his word, he sent forth himself to heal them.
Yeah.
And one other thought I'd just love for you to comment on is in Dr. Tim Jennings, one of his books, he's talking about fear and just the physiological impact. And you and I've talked a lot about that. But I remember one particular story when a man was misdiagnosed and they told him that he had stage 4 liver cancer or something like that and was terminal and would probably die in 3 months. Well, he died in 3 months, and then when they did the autopsy, it was the wrong diagnosis. There was like a nodule or something like, you know, that he completely could have recovered from. And, you know, it just begs us to think about, you know, and I've heard stories of people saying, you know, your baby will have this or that, you should abort, and they obviously didn't. And you know, there are times we get tough diagnoses, but there's other times where God says something different and then you've got a different outcome. So maybe just speak to the whole idea of, you know, even if there are facts, there is the truth, and standing on the truth, it's will always be better for us.
Yeah. I'll say it this way. Facts are Facts are temporary versus truth. So facts, a lot of times, are facts in the moment, and they become fiction years later or moments later. And so that I know is strange, because my two worlds are science and my faith. And my faith is my filter for all of science to go through. And what I've been doing this long enough where I've seen stuff that I just thought was true when it comes to scientific study and what we know to be good in that moment, years later, they're like, "Wow, turns out it wasn't so good." And then, you know, you've heard stuff come out like, "Turns out eggs are bad for cholesterol, so don't eat eggs." And then they do all this research and find out that the thing that helps balance the cholesterol that's in eggs is in the egg white, not the egg yolk. So if you have a whole egg, you're good. So now eggs are okay. So it's the same thing where science will put out facts, and they're little miniature truths for the moment, but they're not necessarily grasping the truth. And so there's a lot that goes into that. So when I look at something like that, the story with the gentleman who passed away, for me, the first thing that comes to mind is guard your thoughts. And that's just how important that one passage is. When he says guard your thoughts, he's not joking. That your thoughts can have that much of an impact on your health in a negative way or a positive way.
All right.
And so we can heal with those thoughts the same way.
Very good. Angie, thanks so much. Psalm 107, verse 20 is that verse. Such good stuff. I see questions coming in, so we're going to grab those, and somehow we're going to weave in here what it looks like to speak health, to speak healing. I'd love just some practical examples from you, and I can maybe share some of what I do as well. Susie Larson live here talking to Dr. Troy. I see some of the questions coming in. We're going to start tackling those on the other side of the break. Can't get enough of that song. I want so much for every one of us to move from fear to love, from fear to faith. Every step towards healing and wholeness matters, every single one. So if your step today is to look up and allow hope to make a comeback and to believe that God wants to do a healing work in you, take the step, look up, and embrace the expectancy. Susie Larson here, and Dr. Troy joins me every single month to talk about health and the healing process. I didn't even give you an official introduction this time. We just sort of jumped into the conversation. I'm so sorry about that.
It's okay. I'm Troy.
Yeah. In case you're wondering, I'm going to tell you, because we have new listeners all the time. Let me give him a proper introduction, even though we're halfway through the show. Dr. Troy Sproul is the founder and CEO of Synapse Center for Health and Healing. It's located in Eagan, Minnesota. He started Synapse over 26 years ago with a vision to bring an integrative approach to healthcare through functional medicine, making Synapse an internationally known center for true health. And the demand on him is great. And I've been praying more and more that God would continue to expand and give them more doctors, because people are coming from all over. So be patient if you're trying to get into, you know, I mean, there's other docs in your on your team that they could see pretty much right away.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Just, you know, you might have to wait till Jesus returns to get in with Troy. But anyway, let's get after these questions. All right. If you've got questions, text them 877-933-2484. This one says, I have Hashimoto's hypothyroidism and NASH fatty liver. My question is, could my hypothyroidism because my liver is fatty, or do I have a fatty liver because of the thyroid? I read somewhere that the two are connected. I feel like I'm in a vicious cycle. Well, God bless you, dear one. What do you say, Doc?
Yeah, absolutely, the two are connected. And usually it's the thyroid that congests the liver more so than the liver causing the thyroid issue. So you'd want to find out what set off the Hashimoto's. But the one common denominator is that both of them require omega-3 fatty acids to correct. So that tells me there's probably a pretty significant omega-3 issue there. And with the NASH, it's important to not overdo the carbohydrates. Generally, you want to be at 100 grams maximum in a day, but it can even go lower than that. But figuring out what set up the actual autoimmune thyroid is probably where I'd start with that, keeping a close eye on the liver. An autoimmune paleo diet would help both situations with the actual omega-3 fish oil, and you want to do at least 3 grams a day to get the liver supported, and figure out just possibly what might have triggered the autoimmune and the thyroid. And that can be anything from blood sugar imbalances and pre-diabetes stuff to viruses, estrogen or things that mimic estrogen can cause that. Stress that induced leaky gut syndrome should always be looked at. Pretty significant food reactions or zinc and selenium intolerance. And then you've got different things like infections in the GI tract that can also set up SIBO and other factors that have been ongoing. So those are both the scenarios. And it is a vicious cycle, but once you kind of break into it and fix the thyroid and then stay the course, the liver will respond eventually.
And one thing you've said before, I want to make sure that you hear when you're hearing omega, you've said before that, you know, not every omega does an omega make. And
that's right.
So, you know, just basic store-bought brands aren't always safe. Sometimes they can do more harm than good. So you want a pretty decent quality
Absolutely.
Omega. Maybe just say a quick word about that.
Yeah, so some supplements, it really doesn't matter as far as quality and things like that. But omegas, it really does. Mm-hmm. And so with omega, depending on where they get their source of fish oil, if it's bottom feeders and stuff like that, you can actually have heavy metals that have fallen into the food that those fish eat, and they're in the fat of the fish. So you don't want to take those oils that are just loaded with heavy metals. So good companies will do double distillation processes. They'll check for mercury and things like that. So they will say something on the label about their distillation process and whether or not they check for heavy metals.
Yeah. See, that's the thing is I've learned this by mistake, you know, but if you're super diligent doing the wrong things, it's not good.
Yeah.
You think you're doing right, but you're taking something that's bad for you. It's super important to know that. This dear listener called in, diagnosed with rickettsia. I don't know if I'm saying that right.
Rickettsia. Yeah.
Rickettsia, sorry, you still told me that before. Do you know about it? Is it similar to Lyme with ongoing symptoms? What do you say?
Yeah, it can be. It gets treated like Lyme. It's a co-infection. And so one of my favorite labs, InfectoLab, does a good job of measuring it to see if your immune system is responding against it. So a lot of times if you see a Lyme-literate doctor, they'll know how to actually address that.
Okay.
But yeah, it can act like Lyme. It can be treated just like Lyme too. So it's not quite as... it's not quite as hard on the body, but it depends. Everyone's a little different. So it is definitely a thing and not much fun.
Okay. Definitely a thing and not much fun. So yeah. God bless you. Yeah, I hear you. All right. Thank you for the incredible ministry, Judy says. Love that. Was wondering if there's anything that can be done to heal a rectal fissure. My daughter had a baby last July and is breastfeeding. She will be weaning the baby soon, and Botox treatment is recommended. I was wondering if there's anything that can be done in preparation for that treatment or instead of that treatment. What do you say?
Well, it depends how severe. We usually do refer for... surgery or other, that's where the surgeons do a good job. And Botox, they're trying to relax things a little bit. The only way we work with it is to create a different environment and see if that helps. So that'd be things like anything that softens the stool and keeps the bowels moving. So different uses of magnesium and fiber can do that. A really, really anti-inflammatory diet, and then flooding the system with good bacteria, aloe and glutamine are things that can potentially help, but it really depends on how severe it is. We have had success with that when it's not severe and things heal naturally, but more times than not, that's a referral.
Okay, interesting. Okay, after kidney cancer, had a nephrectomy, what is the best way to keep the other kidney healthy? Was blessed to not have to do chemo or radiation. God bless you.
Yeah, so the best thing is drinking water. Water by far. You want to flush everything through. The other thing, I'm just going to talk a little bit about stuff that can really be hard on the kidneys, and that are things that set up kidney stones. So oxalates come from probably 75% of kidney stones are made from oxalates, and oxalates can be found in food. So you can look up low oxalate foods and try and stick to those foods. You can also reduce things like fungus in the intestinal tract increases oxalates. Mold exposure increases oxalates. Roundup or glyphosate exposure and ingestion increases oxalates as well. So that helps quite a bit. Taking calcium citrate with meals helps bind the oxalates that are in the meals and will reduce your stress on the kidneys as well. And then stress, basically keeping your blood pressure regulated, helps quite a bit. But by far the water is the most important, and just making sure that your oxalates are in check. And those are acids. So the majority of acids in our body are taken out through the kidneys, and different things will increase acid. So you have to keep your electrolytes good, but keep your water good. And they do have a test called an organic acid test, and you can see how you're doing with that. And if your acids are high, then you know which area of the body needs to be worked on to reduce the acids. But the general rule of thumb is, if you're breathing out the carbon dioxide and taking in oxygen with exercise, drinking lots of water, and there's no intestinal infections, like fungal infections or anything like that, your acids can definitely be in balance. So diet, just the regular diet, the lifestyle stuff really pays dividends when it comes to the actual acid imbalance in the kidneys.
Awesome. All right, they've got about 2.5 minutes on this one, but I think we can do it. Please ask Doc if he recommends drinking a brine made from soaking rocks of Himalayan salt to counter irritable bowel syndrome, like a teaspoon of water in the AM and PM. What do you say?
That's a great question. I've never used that, so
wow.
I wouldn't be against that because...
He loves MacGyver-type solutions,
yes.
I'm just saying. I see him making a mental note. So.
Yes. Yeah. We use paper clips to fix all kinds of things at the office. I've not used that per se, but that sounds intriguing to me.
Mm. All right. Well, I think we can be pretty effective here. Let's just try this one. It's taken me a while to realize that my left side of my body heals slower than my right. In fact, I get infections like boils on the left side instead of my right side. How is this possible? In 1978, I had a bad injury to my left side of my head, neck, ear in Brazil. Could this be part of it?
Yeah, I love this question because one of the things I did early on in my career was assess the brain and the reflexes from left to right. And you'd be shocked the differences. And so we used all kinds of different things, like using light therapy to stimulate the nerves on the left side of the brain, and it would actually affect the blood pressure on different sides. So there can be a definite difference. Now, you want to look at the other asymmetries, and I'm just going to point out a few things. If you're looking at a mirror straight on and the light is over your head, you look at your pupils. Is one pupil larger than the other? That's a sign that the nerves are firing more to the muscles of the pupil on one side than the other side. You also, when you take your blood pressure, take it on both sides. The main reason why problems can be on one side of the body more than the other is because the nerves on one side of the brain are not firing at the same rate as the other side. So we call that frequency of firing. Similar to the extreme example of that is a stroke, where someone has a stroke on one side of the brain and then they get their arm going into a contracted position on the other side. And you can tell there's a bit of an imbalance there, but it's much, much more subtle with lesser injuries. And seeing what these imbalances are left to right will tell you if the nerves are firing more on one side than the other side. And then you exercise those nerves as best you can.
So it's possibly correctable.
Yeah, it's possibly correctable.
Very interesting. Yeah. Talking to Dr. Troy, we see more questions coming in, and we will be back in a moment. You're having a really great day. We are here to help you, just encourage you, hope to help you really believe that every step towards healing matters. You know, we play a part, God plays a part, we engage our faith, we do what he says, and he's a good God. Susie Larson here, talking to Dr. Troy Spurl, who joins me every single month. He's a founder of Synapse Center for Health and Healing, located in Eagan. So, Doc, we probably have about 12 maybe texts in, so let's just see how we can do here. Linda writes in and says, this week I was told that my thyroid looked like Swiss cheese. What does that mean, and what should I do?
I actually don't really know what that means. It depends on the context, I'm imagining. So if there was some imaging done, is what I'm assuming. And if there's holes or problems with the thyroid, it generally comes from inflammation or autoimmune. So antibodies or thyrotoxicosis. So identifying what's causing that. So if there's a goiter, a lot of times that's iodine deficiency, and There's a great book called Iodine, Why You Need It, and that goes into detail about a lot of the support and help for the iodine for both the thyrotoxicosis and for the actual autoimmune. But I would need more information on that to see if that came from imaging and then what was actually diagnosed. And so autoimmune can be anything from Hashimoto's to Graves. And Graves, it can be a little bit more of a problem if it's not addressed right away. So I'm hoping that's a doctor that told her that and that they're following up with it.
Okay, very good. All right, I have a question for Dr. Troy. For the past couple of years, I've had issues with sinuses. I can have this strange heat that comes across my face, sinuses, forehead, and jaw. I feel bad. I will feel bad or heaviness in that area. It comes or goes. I've had antibiotics, but did little. Now I've recently used oil of oregano, which seems to have helped some, and try other things. Is there anything you can think of? Even ENT didn't understand or give me good help. Made it harder with antibiotics and prednisone. Now, I'm not a doctor, but I play one on radio. But I've battled Lyme stuff and Marcon's, and I've had those same feelings. So I'm so curious what the actual doctor's going to say.
Yeah, I was going to say that sounds like Marcon's.
So
Marcon's is an antibiotic-resistant staph infection, but it can also be fungal. And oregano helps a lot with the fungal part of it, too. So I would suspect Marcon's, and it's not always they do nasal swabs for that, and not all ENTs will look for that. Many do. But I would look at those scenarios. Unfortunately, mold, Lyme, or mycotoxin illness is what we would call that, biotoxin illness, sorry. Those can contribute to problems with your immune system, which then set up Marcon's. And Marcon's creates what's called biofilm, just like Lyme, where the infection protects itself and becomes very, very resistant to antibiotics. But they can do a good swab and at least see what antibiotics would work against the biofilm. So I would investigate that. Sometimes it's also sensitivities to certain foods because our mucous membrane that lines the sinuses also is the same as the mucous membrane that lines our GI tract as far as it started from the same cell when we're first born. So sometimes it's a food reaction that causes mucosal swelling in our sinuses. Some people will recognize that because they'll eat cheese and then all of a sudden they've got excess mucus. And so pay attention to see if diet might be contributing to it. Mm-hmm. It might be a food.
Histamine intolerance
is another one. You are so on top of it.
Sorry. Doctor. I'm so excited.
Yes.
I shouldn't be, but, you know, anyway.
Yeah. No,
I know this.
Yes.
Anyway.
Yeah. And histamines, we're seeing more and more problems with histamines and what's called mast cell issues. And so histamine also becomes very important. And usually, though, with histamine, there is another trigger in the infection world. So usually SIBO, Lyme, mold, or something like that. But that's also one that's very important. And a lot of those people will be not hooked on, but they need antihistamines to actually feel a little bit more normal as far as breathing. And a lot of people forget, but histamine is also a neurotransmitter that's part of our brain. And there are four different types of histamine receptors. So not all antihistamines are created equal. And so even if you don't respond well to an antihistamine, it doesn't mean it's not a histamine problem.
What do you think of like the colloidal silver nasal spray? That is one thing that did help me back then because it's an immune booster, right? And it's a nasal spray.
Yeah.
I mean, is that safe for people?
Well, it is, but it's also a biofilm buster.
So you might get...
You might release some of it and then you have to go after it, so to speak. So a lot of times we'll use biofilm busters to kind of break up the biofilm and then all of a sudden that liberates the infection. And you'll feel worse, but then that's when you take the treatment. We use natural antibiotics. Sometimes we have to use spray antibiotics or nasal sprays with DMSA in there as well. So there's different treatments for it, but a biofilm buster will also liberate things, so you can actually feel a little worse.
So don't do that unless you're under a doctor's care, because you want the 1-2 punch then. You want to be able to address the infection if you release the infection. Yep. So never mind what I just said. All right. But it's interesting conversation, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Where could someone go to test for hydrogen SIBO? And SIBO is small intestine bacteria overgrowth. Where can they test for that?
So there are a bunch of different labs out there, and hydrogen, usually they'll do hydrogen and methane. They should. So you don't want to do just the hydrogen. You should do the hydrogen and the methane. And we use different labs. The LabCorp and Vibrant Labs will do a breath test for Well, LabCorp does. Actually, I don't think Vibrant does theirs anymore. Most doctors have access to it, but may not know about it. So I'm seeing it more and more, and there's quite a few labs out there. I know Vibrant does what's called a gut zoomer, and they actually assess your digestive tract for the probiotics, and their assessment's different than the hydrogen and the methane, but it's a little more in-depth and gives you good information on other aspects of SIBO other than just the hydrogen and the methane. And there's another lab we used all the time, and we stopped using them, but they just did the hydrogen methane breath test, and I can't remember the name of that lab.
Hmm.
But LabCorp definitely does it, and I do really like the Gut Zoomer from Vibrant America, mm-hmm. because they check all kinds of other bacteria, and they'll tell you if you have leaky gut and the problems with SIBO, and so you get a lot more information for it, and it's a little more expensive, but it's way, way, way more information.
Interesting. Okay. 61-year-old woman with a question about treating kidney disease. I'm not sure what caused it, although it was possibly some high blood pressure several years ago. BP is now under control without medication. My GFR is in the upper 30s to low 40s. My diet is good, and I drink 60 to 80 ounces of purified water every day. I've been taking standard process Albaplex and Gotacola Complex for a year with no improvement. Any advice? Been feeling better lately, so I forgot to mention that I've been bedridden with ME/CFS for 2 years, but the kidney disease started a few years ago before I became bedridden.
Yeah, you're probably right about the blood pressure or something else in there. So the cardiovascular system, something along those lines, blood sugar, diabetes, cardiovascular, as long as those are all ruled out and doing well, I would focus on the acids. Kidneys are actually really hard to bring back once they've been damaged. The liver is much, much easier. And so I would seek out someone who can do an organic acid test and see what acids are high. If your acids are high, those have to be addressed. And different acids come from different areas. So we see some hidden infections that can increase the acids. But to get the kidney health back, it's very important to have a balanced diet, lots of antioxidants, that's the vegetables, and minimal amounts of protein and carbs. It's mostly vegetables, and lots of, you're doing great with the hydration, but to get the kidneys back, they need a break, which is really hard. So you have to really do your best to pull the acids out of the body, and that's what you want to actually measure are the acids. And then some people will have some B vitamin and methylation issues, and a lot of the B vitamins need to be checked, and possibly methyl support is needed there, methylation support, which is methylated B12, methylated folic acid, methylated B6, those types of things.
All right, this one. I fought H. pylori and had a severe fall, tearing my rotator cuff, meniscus, and PCL in one knee and hamstring in the other. The ortho doctors decided not to repair them, it sounds like. I feel that these have caused massive inflammatory issues that are out of control. Anything I can do to control it?
So, interestingly enough, H. pylori, when the stomach gets inflamed, it weakens the shoulders. So, that's just an interesting connection there. Whenever I hear, though, someone talk about what's going on, the muscles in particular, so you heal the stomach, it can help with some of the shoulders, but those injuries tell us that there's definitely an inflammatory scenario going on, and there's a predisposition to injuring different areas. And I'll talk on it a little bit like I would an athlete who's trying to prevent injuries. Many athletes come in and they look just buff, and they're very, very good at what they do, whether it be football, baseball, hockey, whatever it is. And then we'll assess them and find out there's little imbalances chemically or physically or neurologically, that when we tweak, it reduces their injuries. All of a sudden, they're able to run and cut without blowing out a knee. Whereas if their adrenal glands are in excess, then all of a sudden they injure the knee and become more injury prone. So there's always a reason for that. Unfortunately, we'd have to identify what is the inflammation, what's causing the inflammation, or the lack of anti-inflammatory in the body. So you can take anti-inflammatories like omega-3, turmeric, if they agree with you, and that can potentially help eating an anti-inflammatory diet really goes a long way. So that's no sugar. A lot of times that's reducing your no sugar and then reducing dairy and gluten and things like that. And then just see what your body does, because an anti-inflammatory diet can really help with all the inflammation. And I'm just going to say this because I see it all the time. When someone has a stomach issue like that with H. pylori, it's usually because the vagus nerve is not supporting the digestive system all that well, and the stomach acid is out of balance. So if you're on an acid blocker or the acid's not being maintained properly, it can lead to that infection rearing its ugly head. And we see that a lot with sleep disorders. So you're either in what we call rest and digest, which is part of the vagus nerve, and that's when our digestive system repairs and recovers every night, and or in fight or flight. And our inflammatory system, anti-inflammatory system, is part of our immune system. That's very much a part of the restoration that occurs with deep sleep.
Okay, I'm going to tell you two things one of Dr. Troy's doctors told me to do about the whole rest and digest, vagus nerve recovery and all that. She said, and maybe correct me if I say this wrong, but I think I heard this right, a couple times a day, take as cold a water as you can handle it and gargle it, right? Did I get that right?
Yep.
All right. And then on the hour, lie down on the floor. You have to be on the ground, on the hard ground, and do a deep breath where your belly fills and exhale very slowly. Do 10 cycles of that on the hour.
Yes. The vagus nerve regulates those areas. So if you're gargling, then you're actively exercising those muscles that nerve is required to move. So
it
helps.
Activating it.
You're activating it.
Why the cold water?
Well, just because of how it affects the brainstem and blood flow.
Interesting. Yeah. I thought that was just a joke to throw in there to make me miserable.
We just want to see if you do it.
Okay, I'll do it. All right, we're pausing. We got more questions coming in, but if you feel like you want to text, do it, because we always collect these. And again, one of these days, we're going to record a show with Doc and just get as many done as we can. So Dr. Troy Spurl, founder of Synapse Center for Health and Healing, is in studio today having a great conversation. I hope this is helpful to you. Again, there's so much to know, but if you get a couple answers, make a few tweaks, it could make all the difference in the world. All right, we'll answer more questions when we return. That's why we're here. Thanks so much for tuning in to Susie Larson Live. Got my good friend, Dr. Troy Spurl, in studio. He joins us every month for just talk about health and the healing process. And I forgot to say this because we jumped in so fast to our conversation today. He's not here to officially diagnose or take the place of your physician's advice. We're just answering questions best we can, give you some kind of hope and some maybe direction about where to go. Hopefully that is helpful. We've got a lot of questions coming in. This dear listener says, what's the best thing to use to get rid of erection dysfunction?
Well, there can be many different causes. We always look at one of the things is with erectile dysfunction, a lot of times there's a cardiovascular component. So we want to make sure your cardiovascular system is doing well. So getting your cholesterol checked and getting your blood pressure checked and getting a coronary artery scan is a good idea if indicated. And just checking the whole cardiovascular system is really important. And we've seen aneurysms and other things that have led to that level of dysfunction. And there are very specific cardiometabolic tests out there that can get even deeper, that can give you some insight there.
Well, you know, I want to have you expand on that, but I want to just ask this. You know, this is why it's probably a problem to just treat symptoms, right?
Correct.
Because you can get medicine online now to take care of that, and that you're jumping over something that could be extremely important, because really if you explore those possibilities, that's preventative care. You could maybe prevent something from happening.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a sign of dysfunction, and so you can take a pill and it'll work, and then the real problem with the nitric oxide that's down or closer to the heart has still not been addressed, and then have a heart attack 2 years later or 2 months later or whatever it is. So it is something I like to look at, well, why? Why did that happen? And is there anything natural? Let's just rule out all of the problematic stuff, and then see what else could be going on. So other than the cardiovascular, you're also looking at insulin resistance, nitric oxide imbalance. And so there's different nitric oxide is like helps with dilation of blood vessels and things like that. But there are other causes for that. Stress is probably one of the big factors as well. Hmm. And so just reducing stress can help a ton when it comes to that function as well. So those are the real big ones, the four: the cardiovascular, insulin resistance, nitric oxide imbalance, and stress.
Hmm. For the cardiovascular, what would his next step be then?
Well, you'd want to really dive into how are the arteries doing. And different cardiologists will look at different things. You can do an EKG. It depends on the other symptoms. We actually have a very cool machine called an endopath that measures the arterial stiffness and the lining of the actual arteries themselves. And so a lot of times you can get the blood work, and when they do the blood work, it's beyond just the standard cholesterol. You want to look at the different particle sizes of HDL and LDL, and so that's just a little bit more of a in-depth test. Oxidized LDL is also important, and then the coronary calcification score, as far as just seeing how calcified some of your arteries are, is also important. X-ray can pick up on an aneurysm, so there's different variables there. And one of the other things, when we're talking about rest and digest versus fight or flight, there is another component to that. Rest and digest, it's rest, digest, and sex. So those are the three things that actually go together. We usually leave the last one off because it's the same thing. If you're being chased by a tiger, that's fight or flight. Your body says danger, and so it sends all of the nerve and blood flow to your arms and legs so you can run away. If a tiger's chasing you, it's an awful time to take a nap, so your brain doesn't support that area. It's an awful time to eat lunch, so your digestion doesn't get supported, and it's an awful time to be intimate with your spouse, right? So a tiger's chasing you, those three things, I'm just going to say that's good advice. Don't do any of those three right there, but our brain doesn't support those systems. So if you're, that's the stress part. If you're in chronic fight or flight for whatever reason, a sleep disorder or digestive inflammation or stress, it can pull you out of the rest, digest, and sex scenario.
Interesting. Wow, I've never heard you talk about that before. Oh. Well, speaking of LDL, this dear listener wrote this in a month ago, so we've got to address it today. I have a high LDL of 185, small dense particles, as well as LPA of 95. An angiogram showed 220% areas of plaque plus two small areas in the carotid. My triglycerides are low. My ratios are good. My CRP and homocysteine are good. Doctor wants me to start Crestor, and there are supplements or other remedies you recommend. I'm a pre-diabetic with fasting blood sugars of 95 to 105. First of all, I commend you on being so aware of your numbers, of what's going on. But what do you say, Doc?
Yeah, so the LPA is going to be reflective of what's going on with the LDL. So it's really the LDL scenario, and something is causing some free radical damage there. And so I'm going to go down a different track as far as the Crestor. Now, some people do have genetic issues, and they do require statins, and they are helpful. However, there's a reason why, same conversation as before, why did the LDLs go up? And so generally speaking, what happens within the blood vessels is there's like a little damage or nick that occurs in the side of the blood vessel wall, and then our immune system sends a signal. They're called foam cells, and they actually go over and they repair the nick, just like you would a dent in the drywall. And then they send a signal to send us more cholesterol. The cholesterol comes in and plaques it. And so that is where we start to see some of the hardening. So she's in the 20% category. That means there's some hardening going on there. So something caused a nick. Those are free radicals. Free radicals are negated by antioxidants. So flooding your system with good antioxidants, vitamin E, antioxidants are in fruits and vegetables, mostly vegetables, but vitamin E helps quite a bit. Now, once you've gotten to the plaquing component, there can be a challenge there because these tiny little microorganisms can get into the nicks and crannies, if you will, and they cause more disruption in the lining of the arteries. And so they'll end up feeding off of the LDLs, if you will, asking for more. So there's a book, hasn't come out yet. I don't want to say too much about it, but it's going to be released this year. It was sent to me by a medical doctor who just wanted my opinion on it and allowed me to read it ahead of time. And it's brilliant. He's been doing a lot of work over in China because their stroke and cardiovascular diseases shot up like us Americans over here because of the dietary changes.
Whoa, really?
Yeah, they have more stroke than heart disease, but it's very similar mechanisms. And they've identified some stuff which he's going to release in his book when it comes out. This is a well-established author. He's written over 15 books in the year. So I'm looking forward to that coming out. And they're still doing some of their clinical studies, which is why he hasn't released a lot of it. But it's very fascinating how much that plays into it. So you have to, first of all, take care of the antioxidant part of it. My concern is the Crestor could help because it's decreasing the LDLs. It'll decrease part of the plaquing, but the original insult is still there. So the artery itself could still be becoming weaker and weaker and weaker. And that's why when you look at a lot of the data, there's really good research on people who have taken statins but has not reduced the incidence of the heart disease. The example I just gave is one of those reasons. Now, there are some times where it actually helps reduce certain cardiovascular events, and it can definitely affect the labs where your lab cholesterol is normal, but we're really after quality of life and reducing the cardiovascular event. So I'd stick with the antioxidants and look at the it's almost like a biofilm buster. You have to bust up the actual plaquing, if you will, and then take care of the low-grade infection with natural antibiotics that are out there too. So different things can be used for that. But start with antioxidants and see what your numbers do. And it's going to be more along the free radical and infection side of things versus an actual anti-cholesterol. Red rice yeast extract is a natural statin. And I'm just going to say, whether you do a natural statin or Crestor, make sure your CoQ10 is being addressed because that it depletes, both of them deplete CoQ10, which is what your heart needs to pump. So very important.
We just got a couple minutes left, and I see a number of these questions. So we're going to write those down. And Lord, Dr. Troy's actually heading out on a much needed vacation for the next few weeks. But let's wrap with this question. I'm just watching my clock here. Talk to every single person to whom you want to address a healthier heart. I mean, because, you know, I've seen some documentaries where not this isn't for everybody, but some who got rid of the red meat out of their diet, they almost within 2 weeks, their numbers changed. But what are some really significant steps we could all take right now to improve our heart health?
So, heart history is pretty interesting in the United States because there was going to get the year wrong, but it was 70s, 80s. They basically, I think it was Kenneth, I can't remember the doctor now, but he came out with the aerobic revolution, basically.
I remember that.
Yes, mm-hmm. Everybody start running and it'll reduce the weight problem and cardiovascular disease will go down. And it did in the beginning. And so we saw a reduction in actual heart attacks. But then marathon runners started having heart attacks. And then he came out with his book, The Antioxidant Revolution. And that's where they found that antioxidants were really important because as you're exercising, you get to a certain point where you're producing free radicals from the exercise or the excess exercise. So it's important to exercise in balance and appropriate. We have to keep moving or you're going to have heart disease. If you overexercise and don't fuel yourself with antioxidants from fruits and vegetables, then you're going to get too many free radicals from exercise. Stress, excessive exercise, diet can contribute to the free radical damage quite a bit. And then when it comes to, we have to stay moving. And then it comes to the circulation, we have to keep the water intake there. And very important, sugar causes inflammation, which decreases your ability for the heart and the blood vessels to work well. Red meat's another thing that can be bad for most or some. So vegetables are the key.
Fantastic. We'll meet you back here next time. Thanks for listening to this conversation from Suzy Larson Live. These podcasts are available because of listener support. You can become a supporter now at myfaithradio.com. And thanks for sharing this audio link to spread the good news of the gospel and to grow the impact of the show. Also, if you would, take a moment to subscribe to the podcast today at Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast player, and never miss a show.